Hey everybody, welcome back to In and Out of Character with me, your host, Mr. Island, where I am talking to role players of all kinds. Today, I have on Dennis. Dennis is from a podcast known as Nameless Monsters. It is a very good podcast. And throughout this episode, you are going to hear me talk about how great I think that podcast is. Over and over and over again. I apologize now, but I really enjoy the podcast, and it is one of those that I highly recommend. They are funny, they have their serious moments, they have moments that just take you in and chew you up and spit you back out in the best kind of ways possible. How that is, I actually don't know. Please do not quote me on this and take that out of context ever. Anyways, sit back, relax, enjoy the podcast, and let me know what you think. And when I was Saturday, when I was talking to Lester, I talked highly about all of you guys. I love y'all's podcast.
Oh, very much.
I think y'all's podcast is excellent. I think anybody who's listening to this wants to make an actual play podcast should go listen to your podcast. Yeah. Well, and so basically what I'm trying to say here is if you don't live up to hype, we're just going to have to do this over again, all right?
Well, okay, speaking of lowering the bar, I am not going to be as entertaining as Lester was. Let's just get that out of the way right now. He is everybody's favorite part of the aforementioned podcast. He's my favorite part of the podcast, and I'm on the podcast. So keep that in mind and grant me a little grace when you find yourself inevitably disappointed and you can't quite get a grip on why that is. Just remember that you just got done talking to Lester, and he's going to be a lot more entertaining than I am, probably.
Oh, he is a very funny individual, but I talked highly about like how chill you are during the actual plays, and how like no matter what happens, you're the type of person who can take an idea and just make it better through your character. Oh, you know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah. Brad is a hilarious character. I love Brad so much.
Well, thank you. I do too. I like him a lot. He's a cool guy.
What was your inspiration for Brad?
My inspiration for Brad. I don't know. There was something about the mundane that I really liked. Excuse me, because what's the name of that trope? In sci-fi and fantasy and all that sort of thing, there's this trope of the sort of normal person who doesn't know what's going on ever. And they mainly exist so that the author or the screenplay writer or the showrunner, whoever it is, can explain the fantasy / sci-fi things that are going on to us through that normal person who doesn't get it, you know? So all the companions in Doctor Who and, the Xander and Buffy and all that kind of stuff, they're there so that way when Doctor Who says, this is a gibbledygorp thermos or whatever, that person can go, a what? And then they can give us a couple seconds of exposition to get us, the viewer / listener, up to speed, right? And so I think that since the mundane is supposed to kind of be that person, that archetype, I thought, what if I take the sort of know nothing baseline and just really play up the stupidity of that, right? And just really make him as clueless as possible and as likable as possible. All of those sort of stereotypes that exist within that archetype, just crank that dial to 11 and just have fun with it.
You certainly did it, to be honest with you. You have certainly done it. What was the episode? I think of very fondly. I don't know why. It has to do with the nunchucks. It has to do with Brad's nunchucks.
Yeah.
But he lost those, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Spoilers.
Spoilers for anybody out there listening. But it's just, he's just such a simple, likable character. And I think that every table needs to have that sort of trope at the table. Like, Like, there's the people who play, like, way too seriously, and then there's people who don't take it seriously enough. Like, I was talking to Lester about this again, and you have those people who come up and name their characters Lord Thunder Dick of Esquire whatever. And you kind of want them to take it more seriously, but you don't want it to be, like, so serious because you still want to have fun. And I think that Brad hits that area just perfectly.
Well, thank you. I sometimes am not sure how well I'm actually walking that line, because you never really are certain of how something is going to land when you're making it all up for other people to listen to. So it's nice to get some validation that it's coming across and being received well.
Oh, absolutely. I anything that y'all's group does in the story so far, I have just been absolutely enthralled with it.
Good.
I'm always excited to see how Lester is going to make things more chaotic as possible. Yeah. And I'm always excited to see who Mags is going to kill next.
Right?
Which is the running joke, and I know she hates it, but I can't help it.
Listen, if she didn't kill so many people, we wouldn't make the joke, would we? Again, spoilers, but at this point, dear listener, definitely go and binge Nameless Monsters wherever you get your podcasts, and then come back and finish this so that we don't, spoil too much. And that's my plug.
Absolutely. Links down below. Please go listen to it. I said it during Lester's episode. I'm saying it during this episode. Please go listen to it. It is really good. And also another thing that I like that the podcast does that a lot of AP podcasts don't do. A lot of actual play podcasts will put out like the whole 2 to 3 hour session where Heather goes along and she edits it down. Uh-huh. To make it an hour, and she makes it sound good. She makes sure that everything is understandable, and I think that's like it's really appreciated when that happens because I'm not sitting there listening to 2 to 3 hours of ums and ah and
yes.
This is what we're doing. Bang, boom, done, out the door.
Yeah, Heather does a really really good job of not only playing Mags Oliver but also making all of us sound like we know what we're doing.
that's the true power of editing.
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell you how many times we have gotten done with 10 minutes of just nonsensical riffing on, I mean, I don't know, scrotums or communism or like pick a topic out of a hat only for it to end with us all laughing and her saying, I'm cutting all of this, of course. Just hours of stuff on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, give her a pay raise, please.
Well, right now she's not getting paid anything, so yeah, we'll triple it. Why not? That is actually, if we ever get a Patreon, that's the first thing the money's going to go to is paying Heather to edit the podcast for us, because she's basically got a second job, you know?
Yeah, it's podcasting can take a lot of work. But I do want to know, how did you get involved in the Nameless Monsters podcast?
So I know Heather from college. We both grew up in Tennessee. Well, she was a military brat, so she kind of grew up all over. But we both went to college in Tennessee at a very conservative Christian university, because that's what you do in Tennessee, apparently. Mm-hmm. And we were both part of the theater program there. And she was kind of my big sister, you know, during our time there at school. And then after college, we sort of just lost touch for years and years. And I don't remember what it was. Somehow I stumbled across her on Twitter or something. I don't remember exactly how, but I think I reached out to her one of us reached out to the other, and we realized that we both liked playing D&D. I didn't realize that she had ever had an interest in that hobby, but I think it was on Twitter. I saw a picture that she had posted randomly of a Critical Role themed tattoo that she got. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know you watched Critical Role or played D&D, and that sort of like reignited that interest. And so when I, during the pandemic, got tired of being bored all the time and wanted to start up a campaign of my own with some friends just online, she was one of the ones I reached out to. And then when she and Nate decided to pull the trigger on this podcast idea, she reached out to me to see if I would be interested in auditioning for a role. And so I did. And so here I am. Now I'm talking to you.
Do you ever think about what your podcast does out in the world? Or do you just, or is it just get in there, record, go home, go back to your day job?
Well, of course, the big dream is to one day retire with all that sweet, sweet podcast money that I'm raking in, buy an island and, you know, all that. You know how it is. You're podcasting. You know what it's like.
Money all day, every right? day. If you want to go support both the Nameless Monster on Patreon or coffee, yeah, go do that.
We actually don't have a Patreon yet. We need one, but we don't have it. You can just send I don't know. I was going to say send money to us somehow, but I don't know how that would even happen. Keep your money. It's fine.
Set your money on fire. Do it the way that Lester would want you to do it. Go outside.
That's right.
Put your money in a bucket. Set the bucket on fire.
That's right.
And the smoke will get to
that's the right. guys it's all somehow. An illusion. It's all an illusion. It's all imaginary. Who cares? No, I don't really think about it much, honestly. I also have ADHD, so sometimes once something is out of my immediate sphere of perception, it ceases to exist. So yeah. It very much is me just playing a fun game with my friends, mm-hmm. and then I get to listen to the game again when it's edited, and I get to remember all the fun jokes we told. And the only time I really think about it being out in the world is when people in the actual place Discord that we're part of respond to us and tell us how much they loved our show, and that it's weird to have fans, even if it's only like six fans. It's weird to have fans of a thing,
right?
that I'm making.
Mm-hmm. I get that, because I do get people who message me all the time about the podcast, and I was like, wow, it's weird that you actually listen to my podcast.
Yeah,
which, like, nobody out there take that negatively. It's just I never thought that people would be interested in the things that I am interested in.
Yes, exactly. I am so grateful that people really enjoy what we're doing, because why, you know, I mean, we'd play the game anyway, but why else would we record it and all that stuff if we didn't want people to enjoy listening to it? Mm-hmm. But I just never thought I'd have fan art of a character that I play that wasn't drawn by me. You know, that's a weird day when that happens, and it's exciting, but it's very strange.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Sort of on the same topic, but going like to a different point of view, how did you get into role playing in the first place? Like, was it D&D or?
So I started very late in my role play journey. So I've always been a theater kid. So I've always performed, and I've always enjoyed digging into characters and things like that. And I've also always been kind of a fantasy kid. I grew up watching Conan the Barbarian and reading the Xanth books and all that sort of stuff. And but I didn't get into role-playing games until after college, actually. I started watching Critical Role, and I'd always kind of had an interest in the game, but didn't know how to get involved, didn't know anybody that played, anything like that. Started watching Critical Role and actually started looking for a group of people that I could just run a game with. I was so interested in playing that I was willing to be the DM the very first time I ever played the game, and was asking around with some friends of mine, and they were like, well, actually, we are about to start a game. Like, we have a guy who's you know, done this for years, and we are going to start here in the next couple of weeks. Would you and your wife like to play? And we were like, yeah, let's do that. So I started with Pathfinder, did like a whole mythic campaign, had a half-orc monk of the four winds, and just never looked back. Wrote an 8-page backstory for my first character, you know, Tales Oldest Time, and just never looked back. And then when that group sort of like dissolved, like get to a stopping point, and we took a break, quote unquote, a break, and of course never got back to it. I was like, well, I'll do it. So I started a campaign, and I ran a campaign for my friends for a couple of years, and then that one died. So I started another one, and then that one died, and then we all started having kids. And now the most recent one that I'm running is 5th edition, Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, and I'm running it for my wife and my brother and another friend of mine from college, and then Heather from the show. And we're still going strong. We've got a game next week, actually.
Heck yeah. Tell everyone I said hello.
I will.
I think it's a wonderful hobby. I think that people, because you got the whole stigma, oh, you play D&D, you're a nerd. And it's just like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking nerd, dude. Like,
yeah,
like I don't even care anymore. Like, I love role-playing as a hobby. I think it is just the best sort of pastime you can kind of get into, because you don't need you don't even need fancy books or pieces of paper or like that. It's just storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just storytelling with friends and family, and anybody can do that. And I just, I love it so much. I'm sorry, I've gone off a tangent. I'm really passionate about this hobby.
I don't think it's a tangent at all. I think it's very closely related to why we play the game. And I agree. And I think, honestly, has there ever been a better time to be a nerd? You know, you know, I'm sure that we're probably the first podcast to ever talk about the social impact of like Stranger Things featuring D&D on the hobby, or Critical Role breaking into, you know, the popular YouTube space. No one's ever discussed those things at length before.
No, never.
But yeah, I mean, there's no better time to be interested in this sort of like sphere of entertainment, you know?
Oh, yeah. And there's so much that you can do in the whole world of role-playing. It doesn't have to be D&D. There's so many tabletops out there now. Like, you know, Kickstarter, you can find dozens trying to be Kickstarted right now. There's always, like, every week, there's another dozen or so that are released out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Some of them are small, some of them are big. And there's so many different flavors of tabletop role-playing games as well. There's like one page one shots where you're just supposed to sit down with your friends for 3 hours and that's it, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the long ones.
Yep. And I like both of them. I want to get, I've actually been trying to get my brother to run a game, and I just want him to do a one shot that I found, and it was, what's it called, it's by the guy, I think it's the same guy who did like Honey Heist, but it's like a one page rule book kind of thing. And the party is a group of angry geese who are generally trying to wreak havoc in a small town and steal pies off of windowsills and things like that.
I love that. And also because I love that because I think that sounds chaotic as hell.
Yeah.
And also, I really hate geese as a form of bird. And I just want to live out my anger and rage as a geese.
Yeah.
As a goose.
That's right. It sounds bonkers, and I would really enjoy doing that. But yeah, you can do literally anything. If you can imagine it, there's probably a system out there that exists for you to play it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I'm looking at my large shelf. Well, I can't say large anymore. I have like a bunch of very small books and a bunch of very big books up there. Which, speaking of, I say this a lot in the podcast. I did not know that Monster of the Week was like such a big book when I first bought it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I had no idea, because I bought it specifically so I could kind of keep up with what you guys were talking about in the podcast, you and $2 Creature Feature.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and I got the book just so I could, like learn a little bit more about the rules and, like, follow along. And I had no idea it was, like, this massive core rule book.
Can I be perfectly honest with you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. Honestly.
Oh, yeah, big.
Because as a player, I really don't have to know that much. I just have to understand the basic moves and kind of the goal of the game and my own playbook. And other than that, I can be as ignorant as I would like to be about the rest of the world and, like, what's happening behind the scenes. So, yeah, I had no idea either.
How has being a parent affected your role-playing?
Mostly just logistically, it's harder to find time to do it. That's probably the most immediately obvious change, which is why we are currently recording it. You know, we started at 9 o'clock tonight. It's just hard to, you're not as free as you once were when you have kids.
And it's not a bad thing.
No. It's not a complaint. It's just, just is, you know?
Yeah. Like, that's always my biggest fear. Like, when people listen to this and I talk about my son, I don't want anybody to think that, oh man, I have this ball and chain attachment. No, it's not that at all. I
love my son. I love spending time with my son. If I could spend all day with my child, I would.
Yeah,
I absolutely would. But there are, you know, you got to let them grow, and there are things you still like to do. And, you know, your child can't be there for all of them.
Yes, I am a father, but I'm also still a person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but you make it work. So that's probably the most like tangible impact. But as far as like the actual game itself, I think it very much depends on what I'm doing. Like when I'm playing Brad, it probably doesn't make much of a difference. You know, there also haven't been a lot of children in the world that we're playing in the game that I'm running. For example, when we started this, it was I did this sort of like lines and veils safety tools. Are you familiar?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And not that exactly, but just generally, is there anything that you guys like don't want or anything that like you'd rather not just deal with at all? And I remember we ran an arc where there were a bunch of like, I'm doing the thing now where I'm telling other people about my campaign and nobody cares, right? Like nobody cares about anybody else's T&D campaign, but contextually it makes sense because there was the very first that I had about this area they were going to was one of the things they could possibly do was break up like a kidnapping ring, like a child kidnapping ring. And I had to take some time and like figure out, do I even want to do this?
Right.
You know, like, is this something I'm even okay with talking about? I went ahead with it, but I had to be very, very delicate in the way I dealt with it. Because back in, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have thought twice about, you know, creating a series of traps and obstacles to be overcome, like using the children as part of that problem, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just not, I found very quickly I'm not okay with endangering children. Even imaginary children.
Yeah. Anything that has to deal with children in any of my campaigns, like I tell my friends, I want to be a part of these stories, but if there are children involved, then there's a line that will not be crossed. I'm sorry. If you want me at this table, I that line can't be crossed.
So there's, I think that is probably, as far as like the actual gameplay it goes, is probably the most, that's probably the only thing that's really altered so far, if only because it's the only time it's really come up, you know?
Yeah. Well, that definitely says something too. Like, as you grow as a person, your stories grow, your characters grow. Like, your characters are, no matter what, in these stories that you're a part of, are inevitably a part of you. They come from you, the players and the storyteller. And so it's to be expected that you have these things happen. Like, like you said, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have cared. Like I'm okay with dark themed role play and all this other stuff. But as I've gotten older, and especially now that I have a son, I don't want to hear stories about that. Hell, sometimes I don't even watch the news out of fear of listening to something about a kid. You know what I mean?
Oh God, yeah. Yes. No, I know what you mean. It's been
But there is something to say that's like growing and learning your limits is not a bad thing, I wouldn't say. It's definitely a good thing because it gives you the ability to work through these stories for yourself. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. And I think it's important because one of the biggest things that this hobby has offered me is a sort of escapism. Not just escapism, but I get to tell stories in which the good guys are just going to win mostly. Like, bad things will happen, but the good guys are going to win. And, you know, and I've always kind of been that way. Like, you know, when I played Fable, I was always the good guy. Anytime there's like a morality system, it might as well not be there because I'm just going to be the good guy. That's just, that's just what I'm going to do because my wish fulfillment is that everybody's happy and nobody has a bad time. You know?
Yeah. I get that a lot. Like, my favorite Mass Effect playthrough is Paragon Shepherd. I just like it when, you know, like, sure, there are tragedies in life, but I like it when there's good, man. Like, I just want the good stuff.
Yeah.
The whole hard stuff. I picked up a book recently, and I picked it up only because I knew it was good and wholehearted and wholesome.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Everything in the real life right now just dark and bleak all the time, like with social media and stuff like that. Not trying to go on a rant about that stuff, but you get bombarded with the dark stuff all day long, every day, back to back. And you just want to sit down with these stories and be good. Like, yeah. I love Baldur's Gate 3 so much because I like the wholesome moments. Like,
yes.
The good, fun little bits that we do get in our campaigns. Like, a lot of the stuff that you see from Baldur's Gate 3, or Baldur's Gate in general, is actually what happens in a lot of the campaigns. You just get fun, silly stuff all the time. I don't know if you're ever played Baldur's Gate.
I have been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate 3, yes. I never played the first two, but I'm actually right at the end of Baldur's Gate 3 for my first playthrough.
Hell yeah.
And I've got about 200 hours in that game, in that campaign. And then my wife and I are playing a co-op campaign that we're 140 hours into.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And as soon as I finish my campaign, I'm going to do a solo tactician run just with one character and no companions.
I love
this
that.
Is like a challenge run.
Yeah, I love that so much. I've been a big fan of that game since it came out. I'm so heartbroken to hear that a lot of the people who made that game got laid off too.
Oh, I know.
Like, yeah. Like, I'm really not trying to bring reality into this conversation, but like, it does suck to know that something that made so many people happy, to that just that can occupy so much time for people, got like laid off from job, got fired essentially.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm saying laid off. I should just say fired because that's what happened.
Yep. Well, I think there's a reason that all of Brendan Lee Mulligan's bad guys are metaphors for capitalism. You know, it's kind of the world that we live in. And going back to the idea of like escapism and wish fulfillment, how many times in this life do you wish that we could just cast a spell or pick up a sword or, you know, find a tangible thing that if we could just beat that thing, everything would be better, right? I think for me, at least, that's one of the big pulls of the game is that this is going to be such a downer of a conversation, I'm afraid.
No,
but it gives me the option to have power that I don't have in real life to affect circumstances that would normally seem out of my control.
Again, it says something about sort of the current state of just everything, because there are people need to understand, and this is something I really push on this podcast, is that there's a lot of good things about role-playing, but there's also, you know, bad things about role-playing. And the bad, like, one of the bad things about role-playing is that so many people are drawn to it because the real world, the world that we live in, kind of sucks. And we have all these things that we have to overcome that are way more complicated than just stopping a bunch of goblins from raiding a town.
Right.
Or fixing someone's wheel that fell off their chariot or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Like, the real world is so much more complex than we ever gave it credit for as kids. And so as we grow, we find ourselves yearning for moments of simplicity in the trials that we have to go through.
Yeah.
Also, not trying to be a downer.
Yeah, I get it.
That's just a part of it. That's just a no. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I forgot to wiggle my mouse and my my thing started to shut down.
I hate it when my thing shuts down.
Man, when my thing shuts down, it sucks. It
just ruins my whole day.
Absolutely.
That's one of the dick jokes that Heather would probably have cut from our podcast.
Yeah.
Can I say dick on your podcast?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Dick.
I just said, I was talking about Lord Thunder Dick earlier. Yeah,
that's true. You said it first. I don't want any strongly worded letters. He said it first.
Is there any other like tabletops you're super interested in playing?
So the ones that I have played, I've done Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. I've done 5th edition. I'm playing Monster of the Week in this podcast, Nameless Monsters. Go check it out. And let's see, I've played Brindlewood Bay. Are you familiar with that one?
No.
So Brindlewood Bay is a role-playing game in which the players are old ladies who are part of a book club, and they solve mysteries a la Agatha Christie in their spare time.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. And so that's like the surface level, but then there's like a deeper mystery that's happening. So it starts out with just like, we're solving a murder because the police can't be bothered, like that sort of thing. And, but then as you play, you slowly uncover like occult dealings and like Eldritch horror and that sort of stuff. So it sort of dives into actual magic and nightmare fuel the longer the game goes on. And one of the really cool things about it is, like, you're gathering clues. Like, a lot of your abilities revolve around getting into places, gathering clues, that sort of thing. But the clues don't actually matter so much. So it's not like there's a puzzle and you have to find the right pieces. It's like you find, quote unquote, a clue. And then when you're ready to solve the crime, solve the mystery, it is up to the players to put those clues together into a narrative that makes sense to create a solution for the mystery. And then depending on how many clues you have, you get a bonus on your roll to see how correct your solution is. And you get to have like the whole Yakuza moment where you like burst in and like explain who done it and how and that kind of stuff.
That's always a fun part, right?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
You walk in and you get to just, here are the facts. Here's what happened. You're responsible.
Yep.
Bam.
And then the cool thing is, even if you're wrong, like you fail the roll, then you, instead of like getting your moment, you get the twist where it's like you suddenly realize, oh no, everything's a lie. Nothing makes sense. We're missing some crucial piece. And you get to like go investigate again and like find the missing piece of the puzzle. It's a really fun little game. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that I've played like more recently.
Yeah.
I would love to give Humblewood a try.
I think I've heard about Humblewood. I think we've talked about that a little bit on this podcast.
Yep. It's kind of like a little cottagecore talking animal skin for 5th edition, D&D 5th edition.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, it's this. Like, it's really sweet and it's really cute. It's kind of like a Fern Gully kind of vibe. You're all talking animals trying to save your forest from like demonic. It's like, well, I'm a happy little badger who's a cobbler, and my wife bakes bread for the hedgehog mayor. Oh, also, there are literal demons trying to burn our forest down. And that, so you get that kind of weird dichotomy. And then I kind of want to give Pathfinder 2E a try.
You know, I have never tried 2E.
I've never played it either, because I started with Pathfinder. That was my first system, and it was so much crunchier than 5th edition.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I like to think about it, right, the reason why Pathfinder came about, at least this is, again, the reason why I think about it, or how I think about it. Yeah, anybody who disagrees, feel free to be mad at me, but I feel like Pathfinder was brought around because Wizards? Yes. Mm-hmm. Wizards tried to make D&D more gamified, right, with 4.0.
Right.
And so Pathfinder came out because Pathfinder was so much like 3.5. And I love 3.5.
See, I never played 3.5, but my understanding is Pathfinder is basically just 3.5, again, reskinned, you know. And I never even played 4th edition. I've heard a lot of complaints about 4th edition, but I've also heard a lot of complaints about 5th edition. And I will say, based on my very limited experience with Pathfinder, 5th edition is much simpler, but that's not always a bad thing. So, for example, in Pathfinder, I mentioned I had a half-orc monk. The DM gave us access to like the mythic abilities. So we were, of course, very overpowered. But by level 12, I could do 400 plus points of damage in a single turn with this monk.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'm a power gamer. I love stories. I love characters, but I want to win the game. So I could, at level 12, I could run in a single turn. I could move 800 feet. And then do 400 points of damage.
Lord, how mercy.
Yeah. And I'd also built him as like sort of a Saitama one punch man kind of situation. So if I didn't want to take a bunch of attacks, I could just hit you one time for like 150 points of damage.
Lord, have mercy. Monks are really strong.
Monks could be crazy. But the thing about Pathfinder is, like, I wasn't the only one in the table who was doing crazy stuff. Like, that was the craziest. But my wife was playing Ranger, And she was dealing, you know, 160, 200 points of damage in a single turn from 250 to 300, 400 feet away from the enemy. You know, like Pathfinder let you do so much more complex character building mechanically, but it also had the opportunity to get out of hand very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite Pathfinder characters I think I've ever made was... It was a so they were a Kitsune gunslinger, right? And yeah. You can use, and I don't know why I went with a Kitsune gunslinger. I think I just saw these things and I was like, shove them together, let's see what happens. But you can make it to where you can heal, like you can imbue your bullets to do stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I remember, and I can't remember if this is something from the game or if this is something I talked to the GM into letting me do. But there's an ability that allows you to be able to do, like if you hit somebody with a bullet, you can then get, like, a free imbued bullet or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would shoot the enemy, and then my allies would just be like, oh, I feel healthier for some reason. And they look down, and there's just a bullet wound in them. They're like, oh, no. What's happening? They were healed, though. But yeah. the DM was made it very clear that I would have to shoot them to make it happen.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
That was the only time I got like a triple crit on anything ever. You know what I'm talking about? Like you have to crit.
Yeah, because you had to confirm. Again. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only time I ever got a triple crit on anything. And it was on just the stupidest enemy ever. And I think it was like I was just some random thug in the street, and my character was like, bang! And I was like, why couldn't that happen to a dragon? Or
exactly.
like a giant troll or something like that? Why the random person who I could have probably just stabbed and would have died?
Yeah, that's the way it always works, though. These dice, I like to pretend that I'm logical and sensible and all that kind of stuff. And the dice are just little plastic rocks with numbers on them. But we all know somewhere deep down that there are either devils or gods or something that are playing games with our games.
Mm-hmm.
And they always, that's the most fun they can have. Wasting natural 20s on, you know, insight rolls or whatever.
As long as I get to hear the clickety clackety of dice, I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
You said something a moment ago where you said you like to believe that you're logical and sensible. And that was something that Lester and I talked a little bit about, where I was like, it must drive Dennis crazy to have to play Brad, who is just so... He's not dumb, but he's so...
He's pretty dumb.
He's fine. By your own admission, he's very dumb. Pretty dumb. And, I mean, he did dive into a burning building to save his nunchucks.
They were his starter chucks. He needed those.
How is that for you, having to play, like, how to dumb down yourself? How is that for you?
it's actually hard, because I do like puzzles, and I do like thinking, and I like to win, and sometimes that requires you being strategic and like figuring things out and putting together the clues. And Brad just is not going to do that. And I do occasionally get myself in trouble in the show because I, Dennis, will ask questions without remembering that I then have to roll to investigate the mystery, and I have no bonuses to that at all. It does not help me to do that. So it has been annoying at times, but you know, that's the name of the game. Sometimes people think above their weight class, so to speak.
Well, I don't know if a random guy on the internet words mean anything at all, but I am very glad that you play Brad. I think you play Brad excellently.
Like, well, thank
just
you.
So good. And you give me so many laughs. And I think at the end of the day, that's the best thing that we can do for anybody on the world, is to just make them laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there should be a balance. I think that I don't like to brag about things that I'm involved in, but I think that one thing that we do well is blending the serious with the humorous, because we do talk about some pretty heavy stuff. You know, people have died, people have gone missing, and like things don't always go well. If there's one thing that's true about people, about humans, is that, you know, you still hear laughter at funerals, you know, like that's just how life works. We are messy, complicated, emotional, sometimes irrational creatures. And so, yeah, I think it's important that we make people laugh. But just like you said before, you can get too jokey with this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that you have to anchor that humor somewhere. And I feel like we do that pretty well.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say you guys do. Nate, wonderful, wonderful driving force of the story because, you know, he's the GM. Mm-hmm. Mags is a very, like, Mags and Nate have the very serious attitude I was talking about earlier, but, like, they're obviously Nate has to be serious. He's the GM, but he's lighthearted enough to say yes and. And yes. Then that puts y'all in these wacky situations that you and Lester just jump into head first, and suddenly you're playing dead for a bunch of chickens in the middle of a swamp.
That was so much fun. I really enjoyed that whole nonsense.
One of my favorite metrics for how much I like a podcast is how can it get me, like, how likely is it to get me in trouble at work, right? Because I'm not supposed to have a headphone in my ear while I'm at work, right? I sort boxes for a living. I sort the color of boxes right now. Like, that's all I do. I don't have to work with any heavy machinery. Nobody's driving near me, whatever. Like, I'm in a corner all by my lonesome. So I always put a headphone in and I'll listen to the podcast. And sometimes, and I wear a headband over my head. Nobody at my place listens to this and gets me in trouble. Yeah, I wear a headband over my head because it's hot in there. So sometimes my boss will come around, right? And I always keep the podcast low enough to where I can hear everything around me, but I can still hear what's going on. And the things that you guys say make me laugh out loud so much that I'm always worried that my boss is going to walk down to check on things in my area and hear me laughing and be like, why are you laughing?
Well, I don't want to get you in trouble at work. I could talk to everybody and see if we could tone that down a little bit.
Oh, that'll help you. Another humor for me?
Yeah, just cut that down to like from like 11 down to about a 4.
Oh, no, you can't do that to me.
No?
You can't do that. Nah. You'll just keep on doing what y'all do and I'll be happy.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking out for you. That's really where my main concern is here.
I appreciate it. But here's what will happen. If I get fired, I'll just tell my boss about the podcast, the Nameless Monster podcast. And he'll listen to it, right? And then, not only will you have new listeners, I'll have my job back because he'll understand.
Yeah. And probably a raise because it's like a thank you for introducing him to to the podcast.
Well,
what podcast is that? Nameless Monsters. Nameless Monsters.
Yeah, you can find the description below, boss. Show notes, links all in the show notes and in the description.
Yes.
Let's subscribe all on all podcast places you listen to. That was a really messed up way of saying that. Go listen to your podcast.
All right, and take two.
I can't do take twos. I'm very bad. I just now started not too long ago working in or helping out at the theater nearby because I always wanted to. And I watch these people do take twos and I'm watching people do the acting and I'm like, oh God, I can't do it. I'm very much a spontaneous person and not a read from a list person. Does that make sense? Yeah.
As a, like I said, former theater kid, sometimes those lines can be really, really comforting to not have to try to think on your feet.
Oh, I get that. Yeah. But anybody out there listening, please, seriously, go listen to Nameless Monster Podcast. It's so much fun. It is a great show. The players are wonderful. The GM is wonderful. The editor is wonderful and also one of the players. Mm-hmm. And if you aspire to ever make an actual play podcast, that is the podcast I would tell you to go listen to.
I'm truly flattered. I am so flattered that I am a little uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. That's a me problem. I should just take the compliment and say thank you.
Don't worry, that's I'm also a me really problem. Bad. I'm also really bad at compliments. Don't worry about it. People like my friend was complimenting one of the things I was working on. I was like, don't, just don't. Please don't. Critique it. Burn it to the ground. Let me know what's shit about it and I'll fix it, please.
Tell me I'm garbage, please. No, I really do appreciate it. I really, really do.
Oh, we're coming up on our hour, because I
Yep.
have to keep these things to an hour. So, is there
Yep.
any advice that you would like to give to people out there about just any of the things that we've talked about today?
Any advice? Just if you haven't played, like if you are listening to these actual plays and consuming content about D&D or just tabletop role-playing games in general, and you've thought, man, I always have wanted to do this, just do it. Find a way to do it. Find a local game store. Ask your friends. Maybe one of them has thought about it too. Go to the library. I live in a tiny little town of 7,000 people, and our library has weekly D&D games on the weekend just because, yeah, some dude was like, I want to play D&D. Can I host games here? And they said, sure. So he has like a teen group and an adult group. Like, if you want to play, find a way to play. You don't have to do voices. You don't have to broadcast it. You can just tell stories and save the day and make jokes and make friends and have a good time. It really, really is a great hobby.
Yeah, and that's literally all role playing is. It's literally all of those things. That's all it is. It's just having a good time with some people. That's it.
Yep. But with
All right, well,
swords and pointy
with
ears.
swords. Yes. Can't forget those pointed ears.
Yeah.
That's a mandatory.
That's really the only difference between, fantasy and sci-fi is how many pointed ears there are.
Is that the sword is if the sword is lit up or not?
Yeah, the sword. Well, yeah, if it's a laser, then it's a sci-fi. And if it's just glowing because orcs in the air, then it's fantasy.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed talking to you.